Twitter earnings, Apple earnings, Tesla and Mobileye break up. Two-factor gets more secure, and say goodbye to those 3D glasses. All that and more coming up on Tech News Today.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Tech News Today is provided by CashFly at CACHEFLY.com.
This is Tech News Today, episode 1563, recorded Tuesday, July 26th, 2016.
This episode of Tech News Today is brought to you by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Rocket Mortgage brings the mortgage process into the 21st century with a fast, easy, and completely online process. Check out Rocket Mortgage today at quickenloans.com/TNT. Welcome to Tech News Today. This is the show where we talk about all the technology news that you need to know to look smart wherever you are. And we talk about it with people who love technology. I'm Megan Maroney.
And I'm Jason Howell. Yes, wherever you are, if you're walking around with Pokemon Go still, are you? Are you still doing that? I don't know. I think the numbers have dropped.
But it's no longer number one in the App Store.
Okay, it's number still, two. They're doing all right. I have a feeling. I don't know how long this fad is going to last. But we're not here to talk about Pokemon Go. No, we want you to stay listening and watching the show. So we're going to talk about earnings. This week is a big week for earnings. Many of the top tech companies reporting each day. Joining us to talk about how Twitter is doing with its earnings report today is Kurt Wagner from Recode. How's it going, Kurt?
Hello, hello. How you guys doing?
Excellent. Great to have you here once again. So tell me, Twitter totally turned it around. They're doing awesome now. What's going on, right?
They're great. Everything couldn't be better. No, unfortunately, this was another quarter for Twitter that was very much like the last one. And what I mean by that is they added a few new users, which is great, but they revealed some very troubling business issues. Most notably, they did not hit the revenue goals for this quarter, or when I say goals, I should say expectations from Wall Street. And more importantly, they lowered their guidance for Q3, which means they're expected to make a lot less revenue next quarter than we initially thought. So the combination of those two things sent Twitter's stock down, I believe, more than 11% in after-hours trading. And it's just kind of, it's tough. I mean, Twitter has just been kind of doing the same thing quarter after quarter after quarter, and it doesn't seem to be getting any better for them. And this was just another one.
User growth also totally stagnated. What was it, like 3 million users in the last three months, basically?
Yeah, they added 3 million, which I didn't even point out as being bad because I was like, oh, they added 3 million. That's okay.
Actually
to put that
something
in perspective, for those people who, and I know that we probably shouldn't get in the business of comparing Twitter and Facebook, although everyone does, but Facebook shares earnings tomorrow, and I would imagine they'll be somewhere in the ballpark of, 40 to 50 million new users for the same quarter. And they're already five times Twitter size, right? So that just goes to show kind of how minute that 3 million is compared to someone like Facebook.
Right. How has Wall Street responded after the fact, after this?
Yeah, they weren't super happy. Stock was down 11%. I was on the earnings call. There were a lot of questions around the revenue miss and, more importantly, the future revenue issues that they're kind of forecasting here. And Twitter basically boiled it down to two things. They said, there's a lot more competition for the brand advertisers that we've always been able to acquire. And the ads that we're selling are more expensive than some advertisers are willing to pay. And the issue is, if you want people to, fork over more than market value for your ads or on the higher end of market value for your ads, you need to be able to demonstrate that these ads are worth it. And so that's the challenge that Twitter now has, is to be able to say, if we're going to charge you an arm and a leg for these ads, we need to show that, you're actually going to be making sales and revenue on the back end, ROI, as they call it, return on investment. And I don't know if they've done a good job of doing that. It certainly doesn't seem like they have, since there were a lot of questions about it. And I think that's a massive challenge. Like, measurement is something Google and Facebook have been able to kind of figure out. But, I mean, it is a really tough thing to do. And I think that's Twitter's big obstacle now.
So much to investors' chagrin, we can't talk about Twitter without talking about harassment. Jack Dorsey made a statement about harassment. It sounded like he was answering someone's question sort of off the fly, but his answer was so it sounded like talking points. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure it was. I don't know for sure. I'm pretty sure it was a prepared, canned answer, if you will. I don't have a problem with that. Only when you're talking about something as serious as harassment and abuse, I would expect him to have something prepared to say. I think the only issue people took with it was that it was kind of folded into the middle of this Q&A. So they were taking questions from analysts and they were taking questions from Twitter. And then all of a sudden they were like, and people on Twitter are asking, and then, kind of framed it in, of course, just the way. And then Jack had his answer totally prepared. It just didn't feel natural at all. Which, again, whatever, that's fine. They should have addressed it. I think the issue for me is more, if you're going to prepare a statement about it, and if you're going to literally tee up a question to yourself about it, why don't you just do it at the very beginning of this call, right? Like, don't fold it in with all the other Q&A as though it's just like another random question. Go ahead and separate it out, address it. If it's really important, which is what they said it is, then make it important by moving it to the very top of the call. And so that, that was my issue. I think people were just at this point probably nitpicking a little bit, myself included, like trying to find things to kind of pile on. But at the same time, you can't say that this is an important thing. And then the delivery of the message and everything kind of go the way that it did. I know it bothered some people, I could tell from Twitter. So I wish they could have figured that out a little better.
Well, it sounded like, I'll read the statement because it didn't really answer the question about, that we all ask, like, how do they keep the free speech aspect of it, keep the anonymity, the good part of anonymity, and also curb the harassment? He said, Twitter not now or never will be a place to show people part of what's happening or being said. So part of what's happening, they don't want to censor anyone. He said, at its best, the platform allows people to reach across the divide. We recognize it's a high hope to elevate civil discourse. I emphasize civil discourse. Abuse is not part of the civil discourse. But that was it.
Yeah, so the issue that I kept facing, I wrote about, and we don't need to get into all of the details, but they basically, to catch people up, they banned a very prominent Twitter troll, if you will, last week. This person had a lot of support and followers who then came and said, hey, this is a free speech issue. Like, you can't ban someone. We are allowed to say whatever we want. And my response, and I think the response of other folks who cover this company, is A, you can't say whatever you want. There are terms and guidelines for using Twitter, just like there are guidelines for using Facebook and Instagram and Snapchat. And when you routinely break those guidelines, the company is free to, ask you to leave, which is what happened here. And B, I think most people would agree that free speech ends when you start abusing others, right? You can kind of say whatever you want in the confines of your own home and on your own property or whatever, but when you go out of your way to be racist or sexist or threatening to another person, I think you kind of hand over your right to free speech. And that is what Twitter essentially did. And it created a bit of a stir, and that's what Jack was addressing today. I don't know how they fixed that problem, though. And he didn't really say how they fixed that problem. And I think it is a massive problem. And we'll see, how long it takes for them to figure this out, if they ever do.
Yeah, because the big, really big challenge is, where do you draw that line? Now you have a certain example of where that line has been drawn in a public sense. Does it go one way or the other way the next time someone complains about someone and says, oh, well, this is a troll because they said this or that? That's a hard assessment for a company like Twitter to make, especially when they've talked so much about free speech and all that kind of stuff. Now, speaking of CEO Jack Dorsey, he's been on for a year now. Again, this is kind of like his latest time in the rodeo. Mm-hmm. He's been on for the past year. Twitter hasn't seen a whole lot of improvement, if at all, in that time. What does this say about his leadership at this point?
Oh, man. What's really tough is that I don't think that, like, the issue that Twitter is dealing with right now. So Jack comes in. Yeah, it was about a year ago. Since then, they've lost a significant number of their top executives, folks at the VP level who have left. It felt like for a while it was literally every week or they'd even go in clumps. It is really hard to do a turnaround when you're constantly trying to fill roles, because obviously what that does is, if the head of media leaves, everyone on the media team says, well, hell, I don't want to be here. Like, the boss who we have liked for the last 4 years just left. We're going to bounce too. And so there's been this terrible churn at Twitter for the last year where it doesn't seem like they're able to stabilize any type of, corporate structure. And so that has to fall on Jack's shoulders, right? I mean, it's tough for anyone to come in and not have some amount of churn. It's just natural. But Twitter has kind of always been a little bit worse and a little bit more public than it seems like everyone else is when it comes to this stuff. And so the fact that it has been a year, growth is still bad. The revenue stuff has gotten worse. It certainly doesn't speak super highly to whatever plan that they've implemented so far. And I would imagine if you work at Square, you got to be pretty frustrated, right? Because here your CEO is getting kind of roasted in the press and kind of leading a struggling Twitter company when meanwhile, we're over here, we're your other company, really. That's the perception, at least from the outside, is that Square is the other company. And they don't want to be lumped in with what is happening with Twitter. And I feel like a lot of times they do because of Jack. And so I don't know how long you can manage two companies, but it's got to be getting near the end of that that rope.
Yeah, the end of that experiment. At some point, you have to imagine that shareholders are going to demand that there be some choices made there. It'd be interesting to see where that ends up. Kurt Wagner at Recode, always a pleasure getting you on the show. So thanks for joining us once again. Tell people where they can find all your work online.
Awesome. Yeah, thank you for having me. You can read my wonderful Twitter stories at recode.net, or I tweet a lot of them out at KurtWagner8 on Twitter. So you can check either of those places. And thanks for reading.
Absolutely. Thank you, Kurt. Thanks, we'll talk Kurt. To you soon.
All right, guys. Take care. Bye.
Right, have a good night.
Well, Apple released fiscal third quarter earnings today. Revenue dropped and hardware sales continued to decline, but less than Wall Street thought they would. Oh, and the company is still sitting on a ridiculous pile of cash, by the way. Apple says they sold 40.4 million iPhones, 9.95 million iPads, which is better than expected, and 4.25 million Macs. The earnings report inspired at least a 6% bump in the stock after reported earnings per share were higher than expectations, which essentially means that Wall Street thought the report would be much worse than it was. Cook also said Apple saw nearly $40 billion in revenue for the last three quarters in China, and that's up 55% from the same time 2 years ago. So, Apple.
Yeah, Apple. last quarterly earnings was kind of like, the big turning point, right? They were revenue declined, for the first time in 13 years, lost $40 billion in value. They haven't made that up necessarily with this earnings report. But there's some interesting kind of points pulled from that. iPad seems to be doing better. And Tim Cook on the last earnings call last time had kind of signaled that he thought that this was going to be a good quarter for the iPod. So
did I say iPad?
It was like a 1990, a combination nine. iPad. I shot it right in the middle. 4.4 billion to 4.9 billion. Compared to last year. So, better. And then also they have a lot of cash on hand. They have for a long time, a lot to say the least. That's actually decreased for the first time in a very long time. And they've been doing a lot of kind of like acquisitions. So it seems to kind of signal a change in strategy, right? Trying to figure out these other ways that they can figure out, new ways to grow the company, essentially. And they have the money. They have the cash pile to do that. So you're starting to see that going in the reverse direction, which means they're, it's a new kind of tactic in their plan.
Exactly. Yeah. Services. I mean, they're talking about Apple Music. They're talking about iCloud, Apple Pay. Cook said that Apple Music, the App Store, the iCloud would be the size of a Fortune 500. Fortune 100 company by next year, Fortune 100 company. That's where they're pushing everyone, services.
I didn't mean to interrupt.
No, go ahead.
I just had to do a search to see if iPod was still a thing.
I still have iPods.
Still kind of is a thing.
Well, the iPod Touch, yes.
You just never really hear about iPod anymore.
No, but that's the first device you'll probably get your children.
I don't know. They already have a tablet. I mean, it's not their tablet, but basically it's their tablet.
Yeah, so. iPods still exist. I still have a tiny old one, my iPad. I don't even, I mean, iPod whatever it was called.
I wasn't the only one to do it.
No, it's confusing. They could have come up with a different name.
All right. So from Apple to BlackBerry. BlackBerry has made a bet on Android, first with its BlackBerry Priv. That was released last year, and it had the slide-out keyboard. And, you know, it was released for a premium price. Now they have a follow-up, the BlackBerry D-Tech 50. If you're a hardware keyboard fan, you won't find that here. In fact, the D-Tech 50 is priced considerably lower. The Priv was priced around $700, so it was considered a premium device. This is coming in at right around $300. So this is BlackBerry's kind of mid-range, budget-minded device. It's much less about unique design and much more about BlackBerry software for the security-minded. They actually say it's the world's most secure smartphone. I love it when they make bold claims like this. How do you make that basis other than the fact that it's pure marketing? But BlackBerry's D-Tech software is built in. That protects against malware, security issues. They say that they've also integrated BlackBerry's own security technology into the operating system, which was developed originally for BB10 platform. And you'll get lots and lots of security updates as well, rapid updates as they happen. Are you impressed?
I think $300 is great for a very secure smartphone. They have less than 1% of the global market. And I mean, it's really hard to make money on Android when you're not at scale, right? It's wonderful that you can provide someone a $300 secure smartphone. But I don't know if this is the future.
Yeah. Well, and the rumors have pointed, I can't remember if BlackBerry actually confirmed this or not. They may have actually confirmed that they had two or three new devices on the roadmap this year. I think they actually did. So this would be one of three that we're expecting at this point. We know that we've heard that some of the other ones will have the hardware keyboard, and that's kind of a signature, you know, feature for BlackBerry. So that might be something to look forward to more if you're a true BlackBerry fan. But what's interesting about this, what I find interesting, is that the hardware specs and the design are actually borrowed from the Alcatel Idol 4, an entirely different Android device. So basically, BlackBerry, you know, worked it out to where they could take that design and put a different, their own backplate on that says BlackBerry, but it features the same design, but it also has, you know, BlackBerry operating system running on Android underneath. So I don't know if what you're trying to do is, you know, bring your company back to a winning formula. I'm not entirely sure I feel comfortable saying that the best way to do it is to take a design that already exists and run with it, you know, and just throw your OS on top. It feels a little lazy to me. Mm-hmm. What do you think?
Yeah, I agree. Yeah. Start with something new.
But yes, so it'll be out. I think it's shipping in August, I believe. August 8th, I think I saw. I can't find it. Yes, August 8th. There you go.
Will you get it?
I will pre-order one, and I will play around with it and talk about it on the show here on the network for sure.
And I'll try to hack it to see if it is the most secure smartphone.
Let's see if it passes the Megan Maroney hack test.
Yeah, I've been watching Mr. Robot, so I can do anything.
I'm scared now.
You should be. Let's move on. The National Transportation Board released a preliminary report of the May 7th fatal accident involving a Tesla in autopilot mode. The report says the driver was speeding, but only going 74 in a 65-mile-per-hour zone. Beyond that, The Verge reports no data was analyzed and an official cause of the crash has yet to be determined. What we do know is that the accident involved a laterally crossing vehicle, which the current autopilot system is not equipped to protect. Today, Mobileye, the creators of the software in the autopilot system, say that aside from the current IQ3 image analysis intelligence, they will no longer provide Tesla with this software. Going forward, Tesla will create the chips and the algorithms for these safety systems in-house. So Mobileye has deals with lots of other auto companies, but they are not, they do not, no longer have this partnership with Tesla.
That's a big loss. Yeah. And actually their stock has taken a hit as a result of that. Curious to know what Tesla, you know, how Tesla can design around this. Obviously you get a partner like this when you think that their technology, you know, either gets you there faster or is better than what you produce in-house. I have faith that Tesla can probably do this. I did find this pretty interesting, though. We've talked about George Hotz in the past, right?
I was
going to
bring it up, yeah.
With comma.ai. I guess I just missed somewhere along the line the fact that that Elon Musk had tapped George Hotz for a job at some point to effectively create technology that would allow them to kick the Mobileye system to the curb and...
Well, what happened was that Hotz said that mobile, he basically threw shade, as it were, on Mobileye. He said that it's no, you know, it's no good.
That's what he does.
He throws shade.
He's really good at that.
Did I use that right? I hope so.
I think so.
Thank you. Thank you, millennial. He threw shade on Mobileye, and then Elon Musk was like, well, then get me something better. And so, yeah, he did. So I think that's interesting because, yeah, now basically Elon Musk is saying, you know, yeah, it was, I think that's what they're saying caused the accident. I mean, they're not officially saying that, but Mobileye and Tesla responded very differently to this accident. And I think that's part of where the rift came from as well.
And I don't know, just knowing that Elon Musk offered, so basically from what I understand, he offered Geo Hotz a multi-million dollar bonus if he was to come on to be an employee and create that technology. Mm-hmm. And Geo Hotz basically said, I'll ping you when I crush Mobileye instead. You know, yeah. On his own. And that's where kind of what has led to comma.ai. So,
yeah.
But yeah, I have all the faith in the world that Tesla can work itself around this. I have a feeling they're filled with lots of engineers, or they have the ability to bring in the right engineers to do the task.
Exactly. Well, after the break, Nintendo's new console, the UK is winning the drone delivery race, and Facebook could be your next landlord. But first, let's take a minute to thank Rocket Mortgage, the sponsor of this episode. If you've ever been completely terrified of the mortgage process, you are not alone. I've done it 3 times, and it still terrifies me.
You're braver
than
me.
Does it terrify you?
Braver than me.
It's mysterious. It's exhausting, and I have no idea why it's not easier than it is. Rocket Mortgage, however, brings the mortgage approval process into the 21st century. Fast, powerful, and completely online, Rocket Mortgage has taken all the complicated, time-consuming parts of applying for a mortgage out of the equation. Hate searching through stacks of old files and paperwork? With Rocket Mortgage, you can easily share your bank statements and pay stubs at the touch of a button, helping you get approved in minutes for a custom mortgage solution that's been tailored to your unique financial situation. Even better, with Rocket Mortgage, you can do all of this on your phone or your tablet. It's a quick online process that you can manage from the convenience of your couch, in your pajamas. You could be wearing a superhero costume. That part is totally up to you. So if you're looking to refinance your mortgage or buy a home, check out Rocket Mortgage today at quickenloans.com/TNT. That's quickenloans.com/TNT. Equal housing lender, licensed in all 50 states, NMLSconsumeraccess.org. Number 3030. And we thank Rocket Mortgage for their support.
All right. Sam Moskovich has talked a lot on this show about Nintendo's upcoming console, the NX. Until today, all we really knew about it was the name of the device. That was courtesy of Nintendo itself. But numerous sources are scooping Eurogamer to some of the details of the NX system. It's a portable system. It's going to have a built-in screen, as you can see in the little diagram here, with two controllers. Each controller docks into the side of the screen, the both sides of the screen. So that makes it a portable device. The handheld console itself will ship with a docking station that will then allow you to plug it into an HDTV to play in the living room. You can take those controllers off, and suddenly it becomes a console for your TV. Now, underneath, there's an NVIDIA Tegra X1 processor, the same processor that powers NVIDIA's Shield Android TV console, as well as the Google Pixel C tablet. That's going to power things, particularly the dev kit, for starters. And finally, if you've missed the days of the cartridge, get ready to get all nostalgic and stuff, as the NX is said to support solid-state cartridges as well as downloaded games. So apparently looking at an official unveiling of some sort in a couple of months, September of this year, March 2017 is the targeted launch. And yeah, are you amazed at the kind of dual use of this console?
I'm confused about this. So this is a device that I can carry around in my purse and go over to someone's house and then take the controllers, hook it over up to their TV and play there. Or I can like play on the bus by myself.
I think so. From what I can understand, yeah, it's like it would be like your portable gaming system, whatever one you prefer. You know, they would hold both hands. You have the controllers, but in this case, those controllers actually snap off, and you can dock it like a normal console and then play on the screen. Both the controllers aren't the same, so I don't think that would necessarily make this a two-person thing right out of the package of taking both controllers off. I think, as far as I can tell anyways, by the diagrams, you'd still need both of those controllers for just your play, which, I mean, makes a lot of sense. But, yeah. And I think the one kind of rub here is that it's the Tegra X1 processor that's powering this. This is powering, you know, Android
an Android tablet and an Android TV console. So it's not like a high performance processor underneath. But the kind of thought there is that if this is a portable gaming system, you know, you want something that's going to be respectable for things like battery and performance on the go. So, you wouldn't be equaling the massive power that you get out of PS4 and Xbox One. So you're not, kind of on par with what Nintendo's done in the past. You're not going to get this ultra high performance gaming rig. You're going to get a pretty good gaming rig with Nintendo's magical, pixie dust that it sprinkles over the top of it with games and stuff.
So the idea is that for developers, they would only have to develop for one platform, right? I mean, they wouldn't have to develop for the console and for the mobile device. That would be good for developers.
I would think so. Definitely that would be good for developers. But I think I'm guessing it would probably be similar to the same experience between both platforms.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Well, the Brits have Brexit, but they might also have Amazon drone deliveries before we do. The New York Times reports that Amazon and the British government have formed an alliance to test drone deliveries after the company ran afoul of U.S. regulations. As we've reported before, the U.K. Civil Aviation Authority, or the CAA, is much more pro-drone than the FAA here. Now, the CAA has not only granted Amazon special permission to test its aerial vehicles, but they've given them even more special permissions beyond what other drone pilots receive. Meanwhile, the FAA has prevented both Amazon and Google from testing drones, but they have approved the drone company Flirty, who, as we reported last week, delivered Slurpees from 7-Eleven to someone's house via drone.
Because that was, a mile
yes.
away?
Yeah, I guess it's line of sight, but okay. Within a mile, I mean, I don't know. I don't know how Flirty got, but they did. They sort of skirt the edges of the FAA regulations. I mean, they're not regularly delivering from 7-Eleven. It was a test.
Right.
But they've somehow been allowed to do that, whereas Google and Amazon have not. But
maybe that's the solution. Every mile, there needs to be a distribution house, and that's totally feasible, right?
Right.
No, not at all.
Well, no, because Amazon wants to deliver by drone to places that are not easily reachable.
Know,
so,
I'm just spitballing here.
Right. Yeah. Great.
Yeah. Supposedly, the tests are going to help to form the basis for the CAA's policy on drone technology. So they're quite excited. It's like the U.S. and, overseas, they're treating this very differently. Mm-hmm. Overseas, they're like, wow, we could learn a lot from this. It's going to help us form our rules and regulations around this. And the U.S. is like, hell no. No way. Not for at least another couple of years are we even going to attempt doing anything like this.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
All right,
I want everything delivered to my house by drone.
Do you?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
I'm a little scared of it. I don't know why. I don't want a drone to land on me. I don't need my package of M&Ms that badly. Two-factor authentication. You know I love it. But one thing that can make two-factor a bit less secure is using SMS as the method for sending 2FA or two-factor authentication notifications. When protected with two-factor, you need a code from a secondary device, of course. And most services support SMS as a method for receiving that code. But SMS has a bit of insecurity to it. For example, many lock screens, I know on Android this is the case, show SMS content without the need to lock or unlock your device. You can change those settings, but a lot of people don't. So someone who's trying to access a person's phone that's protected by two-factor with SMS notification need only request the key, then glance at that person's phone, and you get the secure code, and you're in. The National Institute of Standards and Technology is proposing changes to its national-level guidelines on secure electronic communications by deprecating SMS as a recommended method for receiving two-factor authentication codes, encouraging other ways, which there are a lot of different ways. Like, for example, I use Authenticator with Google, but there's Authy, there's RSA, Secure ID. In a lot of cases, you can get a little device, a dongle, like a security dongle, and that acts as your second factor qualification. But what I found really interesting about this is that another part of this qualification states that if SMS absolutely must be used, the verifier has to verify the telephone number is associated with a mobile network and not a voice over IP service. And that totally would have saved me when I locked myself out of two-factor because I put in Google Voice number. So on a personal level, I wish this existed like a year ago.
Yeah, or even, yeah. because this only happened a couple months ago. So it could have happened, you know, sure. Just 3 months ago, it would have
just,
been existed.
Just any time before when I did that stupid thing back then.
But you're back in your accounts. Everything's fine.
Everything's fine. But services like Twitter, for example, Twitter only has SMS mm-hmm. two-factor authentication yep. as the way to do it. And so I'm thinking they're going to have to play a little bit of catch up. You know, in the long run, and I hope that they do so that they can kind of get around this because SMS just compared to the other solutions is not the most secure way to do this.
Yeah, it's interesting that Twitter only offers that ability because you think of Twitter as a place where you might, you know, be anonymous, you might be a whistleblower, you might be someone who, you know, SMS is not okay. I mean, I'm a regular person. I think SMS is fine. I turn off, you know, notifications so you can't see them unless mm-hmm. you know, notifications on the lock screen. And I feel fine with SMS for now. But the, yeah, saving you from yourself. I want that.
Yes, me too.
Business is booming for Facebook. They plan to hire 6,500 new employees. The only problem is there is already a housing crisis in Silicon Valley. So where are all these new Facebookers going to live? The Wall Street Journal says Facebook wants to solve this problem by building apartments for them near the Menlo Park headquarters. You don't have to be a Facebook employee to live in the new apartments, and 15% of them will be reserved for low or middle income families. But the other 85% will not be and will probably be just as overpriced as the rest of Silicon Valley housing. This is a real problem. I appreciate what Facebook is doing, but I mean, just these stats from the Census Bureau. In San Francisco, San Mateo County, and Santa Clara County added more than 380,000 jobs between 2010 and 2015, but builders got permits for only 58,000 houses or, you know, homes. So wow. It's crazy. I mean, it's a real problem. It's driving prices up. I mean, Facebook wants to clear their image and not, you know, not be the company that's coming in and driving people out. So this is sort of the way they're doing it. But I think it's
an interesting way to go. This has existed in history. If you've ever heard of a company town. Back in the like late 1800s, early 1900s, yeah. There were these company towns. Basically, a company would find a place in a remote area, you know, to build its factory or whatever. They provide housing, shops, transportation, water,
store.
Sewer. Yes, exactly. They provide all that kind of stuff for workers to live and to work, essentially. And I wonder if that's where we're headed. I mean, the difference here is that it's not some remote area. It's,
yeah. Hey, they're not working in a coal mine.
Yeah, that's true. Much different at work environment. And that concept only works as long as the product is in demand. So Facebook, stay in demand. Otherwise, it all falls apart.
Yeah.
I don't think they have a problem with that. But who do you write your check out to, your rent check? Is it to Facebook?
I guess so, yeah.
And who's landlord? There's going to be like landlords on the Facebook jobs page. Want to be a landlord for
yeah.
us?
Mm-hmm.
Many places you can go with this one. All right. TNT's fan of the day is Norm Gregory on YouTube, of all places. This guy, Norm, did what we haven't got before. This could be the first video how I watch that I've seen anyways. I don't know. Maybe you've seen him. And I don't know if you have that video or is it not.
Annoying me.
There we go.
Maybe that's not real.
Okay. We got a Yeti microphone. Yeah, this got us great. On our slight microdosing acid trip yesterday.
I've heard that there is such
a yeah, there we go. Things just got a little weird. That's what I call a setup. That's how you do a how I watch. And thank you for sending that in. I love that we're getting new methods. Just record a video or take a picture of yourself or your setup. Post it on Instagram, Google+, Twitter, Facebook, YouTube, and Peach. And use the hashtag how I watch TNT and we're going to find it. Thank you for doing that.
MIT is working on a solution to your biggest problem, those cumbersome, germ-ridden, environmentally unfriendly 3D glasses they hand you at the movie theater. Now, you might have experienced glasses-free 3D in your home already, but scaling this up to theater size in a way that's been financially feasible has proven more difficult. Enter Cinema 3D. It is large-scale, auto-multiscopic display. It's from MIT's CSAIL lab. It uses 50 sets of mirrors and lenses and isn't ready for mainstream yet, but has been demonstrated to work in an auditorium.
So how do they demonstrate this in an auditorium?
With the mirrors.
With the I don't know, but
parallax barriers allow each eye to see only parts of the screen.
So it's lenticular. It's like lenticular printing is
okay.
What it reminds me of. No. You know what I'm talking about. It's the like rigid like the 3D little printed things where you kind of move and you see a different image that kind of animates a little bit when you rotate the paper. You know what I'm talking about?
Yes.
It's got the little like plastic ridges. That's pretty much what this is. I don't know how you do that at large scale because this requires very, at least with lenticular, requires very kind of small, you know, divisions. And because of that, you kind of get that effect at in a auditorium. Like, it's just so big. Like, I don't know how that's going to work. If you move a little bit, it's not going to be as smooth as they show there.
Yeah,
it's going to be like, even with lenticular, when you kind of move a little bit, move your perspective, it has this like folding quality to it. It's not quite seamless. I'm curious.
Yeah, because
I'm doubtful.
The prototype is no larger right now than a pad of paper. So I don't know. Maybe it was like a very small theater, or very small people.
The world's smallest theater. Took a pad of paper and put it in this tiny little auditorium on the table.
Right, because it matters like where you sit and, you know, that sort of thing. Like we saw the video, it was like seat row 5, seat 3 sees this. And yeah, so I don't know. I'm looking forward to it because I hate those 3D glasses.
Yeah, I don't know. I just don't go to very many 3D movies. I mean, I guess I never really did. That's the problem. Is 3D still a thing that people want?
Really? Yes, really? Like every new movie is out in 3D. It's back.
So.
It left with the now they're plastic glasses. Have you really? Has it really been that long? Since
I went to a surprising. That's not very far outside of the realm of possibility.
They're not cardboard anymore. They're plastic.
No, I realize that. I don't know. It's just anytime I go to a movie theater and see 3D, I'm disappointed because it's like dark or it's just like the effect is not necessary to the movie or whatever. But I don't know. Wow, I'm such a downer on 3D suddenly. I'm really sorry. I didn't expect that when this was in the dock. I like new technology, and I'm looking forward to whatever this ends up being. That is it for this week, or for this day's episode. Wow, it's going to be a long day. I've got two more shows to do. TNT records live every Monday through Friday at 4 p.m. Pacific, 7 p.m. Eastern, 11 p.m. UTC at twit.tv/live. You can be part of the show by emailing us at tnt@twit.tv. You can leave us a short voicemail at 260-TNT-SHOW. And you can find us on Twitter. We're at Tech News Today TV.
We love your feedback. Leave comments where comments can be left. You can email me at megan@twit.tv if you have any questions or comments. And we would love for you to subscribe to the show. If you like it, subscribe, tell a friend, go to twit.tv/TNT. And I am on Twitter at Megan Maroney.
And I'm at Jason Howell on Twitter. Thanks to our technical director and director of the words on the screen, the Burnett brothers, for helping Brian and Greg. And thanks to you for talking tech with us today. We will see you all tomorrow. Bye, everyone. Hopefully I can talk tomorrow.